Tonight, I think we're going to finish up Muktzah. This will probably be the last shiur on Muktzah, unless maybe we do one or two just very halacha l'maisa. I'm just trying to figure out how to do that in a non-boring way. Just like a rundown of items in your house that may be Muktzah and how to deal with them. But all right, we'll see.
Make up scenarios.
What? I can make up scenarios? Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
They're
We'll
all
see.
real.
Right. Okay. Maybe I'll just collect from old emails of questions that I've gotten. The only problem is muktzah questions I'm always asked on Shabbos, so they rarely come in the form of an email. Yeah, I think our next topic is going to be, since no one had suggestions really, so I think the next topic is going to be inyanim of Kriyat Shema and Tefillah, primarily taken from the beginning of Maseches Brachos, for two reasons. Number one, Daf Yomi starting Maseches Brachos in August 1st or 2nd, and I think, generally speaking, if the past is a proper reflection of what's going to happen again, is that everyone learns the first 30 blot of Maseches Brachos, because everyone does Daf Yomi for about 30 days before they give it up, and I thought it would be a nice little push, and also because it happens to be what I'm learning in yeshiva this summer, so I thought it would make my life a little easier. But again, if there are other suggestions or something else that you want other than Kriyat Shema and Tefillah sugyas, please let me know, and we could try to arrange that as well. Tonight we're going to discuss the issue of muktzah as it relates to a flame, meaning we spend a lot of time in the sugya of basas l'davar ha'aser and discussing how everything underneath the flame is a basis to the muktzah. What is the muktzah? The flame itself is the muktzah. What we did not spend any time discussing is what in the world makes a flame muktzah. We discussed all different sorts of muktzah. We had muktzah machmas chesrum kisum, muktzah machmas isurim. We had all different kinds of muktzah. Muktzah machmas mius. We had klisha melach tol isur. We had all different sorts of muktzah. What exactly is the flame? Meaning, what makes a flame muktzah per se? So
Are you referring only to an actual nair flame, or like electronic devices that have a flame and things like that?
Okay, so many electronic devices. I should say, a decreasing number of electronic devices actually have a din of a flame. But depending on what type of muktzah it is, the same muktzah status may apply to certain forms of electric light. So we'll see. But typically speaking, we assume an incandescent bulb has a din of a flame, right? But short of that, short of an incandescent bulb, where it's almost like a wick that gets hot, that actually generates heat. Short of that, we generally assume lights like the fluorescent lights here do not have a din of a flame. There are other issues with turning them on Shabbos and with using them, but wouldn't have a full din of a flame. So we'll have to analyze the Shabbos candles. Let's just take a simple old-fashioned case, something that hasn't changed in all the years. Now they use different types of oil and different things, that wax that turns into something that looks like oil, but it's basically the same idea. There's a burning agent, some sort of oil or wax, and there's a wick, and there's a fire. It's same as the cavemen used to do. So let's discuss a little bit about that, and then maybe we'll see if we could connect it back to other modern day examples. So let's start with the Gemara Masech Shabbos Daf Mem Vav and Beis, source number one. Rami Le Abaye Le Rav Yosef. Mi yamar Rabbi Shimon kavsa mutul v'taltala, kavsa in lo kavsa lo. So if a flame is extinguished, so then you're allowed to be metaltal the ner. Otherwise, you're not allowed to be metaltal the ner. Why? Meaning, when the flame is still lit, you're not allowed to move the ner that has the flame. My taima dilma bahadi dinakatla kavsa. Because perhaps the concern is, according to Rabbi Shimon, that maybe while you're moving it, you might accidentally extinguish it. So says Gemara, Hashaminu le Rabbi Shimon damar, davar shein miskavin mutter. But if that's the whole concern, Rabbi Shimon is the one that holds in Gan Shas. He's the guy that holds everywhere that davar shein miskavin is mutter. That if you unintentionally violate a melacha, so that's mutter. You were intending to do A, and by accident B happened. Melacha B happened. So that's a 100% mutter. Titania Rabbi Shimon Omer, for instance, the classic example of davar shein miskavin. Rabbi Shimon says, Gor adam kisei mita v'safsal. A person could drag a chair, a bed, a bench, as long as he doesn't intend to make a furrow in the ground, you're allowed to drag whatever you want to drag on the ground. That's fine. So, So says the Gemara, here's the rule. Whenever doing it intentionally would involve an Issur D'Oraisa, Rabbi Shimon would make an Issur D'Rabbanan on doing it unintentionally. Kol Heicha D'chi Mechavein Ika Issur D'Rabbanan, Ki Lo Mechavein Shari Rabbi Shimon L'Chadchila. Whenever doing something intentionally would only be an Issur D'Rabbanan to begin with, so doing it unintentionally, he would say, is Mutu L'Chadchila. So Masav Rava asks, is that really true? Is it really true that anything that would involve an Issur D'Oraisa, doing it Shalo B'Kavana, even Rabbi Shimon would hold his Aser? Midrabanan, but his Aser? Masav Rava, Mochrik Sus, Mochrin Kedarkan, Ubilvad Shalo Yiskavin B'Chama Mipnei Chama B'Gshamim Mipnei Gshamim, Vatznun Mavshilin B'Makal Achorehen. The Gemara discusses, Rava quotes from the Tanaim that discuss a person who sells clothing. So how did the person go around selling clothing? They didn't have wheelie suitcases that they could just wheel the clothing around in. So what would they do? They would wear layers and layers of clothing. And they would start peeling off. You want this shirt or this shirt or this, and that's how they would sell. That's how they would sell the clothing. Now it could be one shirt is linen, one shirt is wool. It could be that there's all sorts of mixtures of materials, and therefore there may very well be shatness on the person at any given moment. So the halacha is that he's allowed to be mocher kedarko, do the normal thing, wear all those layers of clothing, as long as he's not having any kavana to get hana'as levisha from the shatness. He's not getting any hana'a from the clothing, he's not getting protection from the sun, he's not getting protection from the rain from the clothing. Hatznuin, the tznuin are like the specially from people who are very, very careful about everything. So they would tie the clothing all to a stick and hold the stick over their shoulder, and that way they wouldn't be wearing the clothing at all. But la halacha, that was not necessary. Now, let me ask you something. To wear shatness, is it d'oraisa or is it d'rabanan? It's d'oraisa. So whenever, what do we say the rule is? Whenever there's a din d'oraisa that could be violated if you have kavana, so shalom b'kavana, Rabbi Shimon's still going to say is asur mid'rabanan. So over here, why are they allowed to wear all these layers of clothing? Still be asur midrabanan. V'hacha deki mechavin yisuru d'oraisa ika, ki lo mechavin shari Rabbi Shimon l'chadchila. Over here, Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter, l'chadchila, not that it's asur midrabanan. Ella Amar Rava, so rather Rava says, scratch that whole rule. Rabbi Shimon clearly holds Dovr Shem Miskavin is mutter, across the board. What about the case of the Ner? Why is it that when you have a lit candle, you're not allowed to move it from place to place? Nothing to do with the concern that you might extinguish it. That can't be the issue. Ella Amar Rava, Hanach L'Ner Shem Nupsila, Ha'ol Dinase, Basis L'Dovr Ha'Aser. So this is what we discussed over the last several weeks, that the Ner, the Shemen, the Psila, the Ner, again, as we said, doesn't mean what we would call a candle. It means like the holder that holds the oil and the wick. So that the Ner, the little pottery holder, and the oil and the wick, they are all a basis l'davar aser, which means they are something that holds muktzah on top of it. What's the muktzah that it holds on top of it? So it goes unstated, but it's obvious in the Gemara, is the flame is the muktzah. But what goes unstated also, and Rashi says it explicitly, the davar aser l'shalheves. What is it? What's the davar aser? The flame. The b'chiyai muktzah mod Reb Shimon shakli tafala shalheves ba'od abo v'lav mishum d'chayish l'kviya. Reb Shimon is going to be moda that it is that the ner, the shemen, the psila is all tafel to the flame itself. That's the primary element of this whole contraption, and therefore, since the flame itself is muktza, everything else is a basis l'davar ha'aser. Now, the Gemara does not tell us what makes the flame a problem in the first place. What makes the flame aser? It just tells us that the flame is a basis l'davar aser, but doesn't tell us what makes the flame a basis l'davar aser. So, like we've done in the past, in several shiurim, I want to go through basically how Rav Asher Weiss sets up the entire sugya. I think he has a way. Muktzah happens to be a very challenging limud, and it's always important, particularly in the most challenging limudim, to find those who present things who have the gift of clarity, who are able to present things in an organized and clear fashion. Sometimes with some of the lighter limudim, you know, you just want the biggest genius. You want to find who has the sharpest vard or whatever. But clarity is always important, but particularly when you're dealing with a difficult limud and you need some organization to, at least I do, some organization to really find your way through the sugya. So that's why I keep going back to Rav Asher Weiss, because of all of his genius and sharpness and everything else, his real gift is the gift of being able to make things clear, which is, you know, what I was pretty much brought up on with Rav Schechter. But so let's see how Rav Asher Weiss clarifies this sugya. So he points out essentially that there are three, let's call it three, maybe four, or maybe five basic approaches to what makes the flame muktzah. Two that are found in earlier achronim, and he's going to take those two. They're both found in the same achron. They're both found in the Chazon Ish. He's going to explain why he doesn't like the two approaches of the Chazon Ish. Then he's going to suggest something almost offhanded suggestion of what makes the flame muktzah, and he's going to immediately reject it. And then he's going to give a serious approach. That's something that he believes is a genuinely serious approach toward dealing with this issue. So if you look at page 7 on the bottom left-hand side, so he quotes from the Chazon Ish. Now I have the actual Chazon Ish here as well, the actual passage of the Chazon Ish on page 5 and 6. But I thought, again, Rav Asher's clarity is and his ability to summarize makes it a lot easier than reading through Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish in general are very, very difficult. They're not an easy read. So he writes as follows. Kasva Chazon Ish besum memalvos tazayin. The yisod din muktzah de shalheves. What is the nature of the din of muktzah of shalheves? B'masha adam kovea lo makom. Ve'ein derech letalta lo mimakom lo makom. Typically, the way lights are used is that you leave the light where it is. You do a variety of things around the light, but the light stays. So when you light a candle, when you light a torch, when you light a flame, the assumed plan is that you're going to leave that flame there the entire Shabbos, and you'll do whatever you need to do around that flame. And once you're koveya makom, that it should stay there, so then it becomes as if you're makta midaito for the entire Shabbos, that you don't want to move it for the rest of Shabbos, that it's supposed to stay there. De'in derech letaltal saner b'Shabbos, o mishum chash kibuyo. Now why would people, he says, it's not normal to move a ner on Shabbos, which is, we're going to have to question this assertion, but he says it's not normal for people to move a candle on Shabbos. Why is it not normal to move a candle on Shabbos? Well, one reason might be because people are concerned of chash kibuy. Well, wait a second. We just saw in the Gemara that you don't have to worry when you're moving a candle that it might get extinguished, because we pass like Reb Shimon that davar shena miskavin is mutter. So Rav Asher adds at the top of page 8 in the parentheses after in isur bitil tula michash kibuy Reb Shimon davar shena miskavin mutter kumvor besugyan. Even though it's not really usser, but still sometimes things that aren't usser people stay away from. Also, you know, there are a lot of there are a lot of things that people
don't
are.
Ah,
okay, meaning maybe they're not afraid of the issue, they know that it's davar shena miskavin, but if the candle goes out, they won't have a candle. There's nothing they can do about that, right? So good, that could be the issue. Or sometimes people are just even, you know, I had a Rebbe that used to say an expression, firmer than God. You know, they have a little more concern for chashash, violating the halacha, than the halacha actually demands that they have, which in many circumstances is a very positive thing. In many other circumstances is not a positive thing. You have to have a proper sensitivity to Judaism and to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us to know which circumstances are which. But either way, that the bottom line is, Chazon Ish says, people don't move it on Shabbos either because they're afraid it's going to be extinguished. Oh, mishum shezed darkan shel bnei adam, dinanin minaner b'makomo, vein derech letaltal, makom l'makom. Or maybe it has nothing to do with Shabbos, it's just that's the way people use candles, much the way we use our electric lights. The vast majority of our electric lights, we do not move around from place to place. We turn on the light in the room when we want to use that room, and we turn on the light in a different room when we want to use that room. We don't have flashlights all around our house where we just walk around the house with flashlights all the time. The way neros are generally set up to light a room is that you light the candle, you leave the candle there, you want to go somewhere else, you light a torch somewhere else. V'kivin shemakomu kavua. So why does this matter? Because once it's makom is kavua, once it's in a set place, ve'in derech letaltalo, have a muktzah metiltal. Once it's not normal to move it, so it's as if it's muksa for moving it. K'mosh kasva, Tosos le'elman vavam ralef, as Tosos has such a similar principle, that something that's not derech letaltal becomes muksa. Next paragraph, ve'od bi'er shama chazunish. And the Chazanish explains further, da'af ner shemenu psila, the Chazanish now has to deal with an obvious problem. What did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that what's the problem of the muktzah of moving around the whole pottery with the oil, with the wick? It's all because of the flame. The pottery, the oil, and the wick, they're a basis l'davar asr of the flame. But if the whole problem with the flame is that it's not normal to move the flame, well, the flame comes together with the wick and the oil and the pottery that holds it. So if it's not normal to move the flame, then it wouldn't be normal to move the rest of it either. And they should have the same status of muktzah that the flame has. But the Gemara is very clear. The flame is the real muktzah. Everything else is basis l'davar aser. What do you mean? Why is everything else basis l'davar aser? If the muktzah of the flame is that you're koveya makom and you're not metaltel, well, everything else is also you're koveya makom and you're not metaltel. So the Chazanish says, true, the ner shem l'psila should also have a din of muktzah bisha shaner dole, kibin shein derech letaltalon, ela kibin shala acher kibui haner derech letaltalon, ulehanos mikol davar luchud, ein he muktzin. But what happens when the ner goes out, when the candle goes out, when the flame goes out? So then people will use the wick for one thing and the oil to rub on their skin, and they'll move things, the rest of it they move around very easily. The concern, for whatever reason, whether it's because general practice or because of a concern of kibui, is that they only don't move it when there's an actual flame there. When there's no flame there, they move it all the time. Av kol zman sha'ner dolek havo kigamru bidei adam ukpulin va'adashim ukadei rotachas deinu muksa klal af b'sha she'ner uya kibin sha'gamru bidei adam. Okay, he's getting into a concept that could take us a little shiur to really elaborate on, and we'll get into it a little more later, is the concept of gamru bidei adam, that you're the one that makes it what it is. You're the one that that completes the object. But the point is that because these items are normally moved, and it's only when you light the flame that it's not moved, that's why they are not inherently muksa, only the flame itself is inherently muksa.
But it's an answer why flame itself is muksa.
Well, it's muksa because the definition of muksa is that you put something out of your mind. You're not going to use this on Shabbos. I mean, why is it klisha melachta l'isur muktzah? Because since it's normally used to do isurim, I assume that I'm not going to use it on Shabbos. Meaning, I put my cell phone out of my mind on Shabbos as something that I don't plan on using on Shabbos. There are things that I could do that are mutter to do with the cell phone on Shabbos. I could use it as a paperweight. I could use it, to have a catch with my kid. I could do all sorts of different things that technically would be mutter on Shabbos. But since a normal person at the beginning of Shabbos assumes he's not using his cell phone for the rest of Shabbos, so that's what makes it muktzah, and now you're not allowed to, now it's muktzah. Now you're not allowed to be metaltalit unnecessarily. So just the fact that you're kaveh lo makom, that's enough to make a muktzah. That creates a sense of muktzah. So that's Chazanish's approach. Now, says Rav Asher Weiss, it sounds good, except I got three problems with it. First of all, first problem is a metzias problem, and the second and third problems are halacha problems. Chazanish assumes a simple metzias, that people are not in the practice of moving candles. If you look in the bottom right-hand corner on page number 8, again, skipping around in this piece of Rav Asher Weiss, va'od yesh lefakpek, l'chor v'divrei ha-chazanish, b'kol ha-hanacha, the whole assumption he has, de'in l'taltal shal heves, v'kovan lo makom, that we don't move a flame and everyone just leaves it in place for the whole Shabbos, d'l'chor v'nira, d'derech haya b'yimeyim, l'taltal ner mi'makom l'makom mi'cheder l'cheder, l'tzor ha-choro. Isn't that how they used to walk around? They used to walk around with a little lantern from one place to the other. We don't walk around with flashlights because, thank God, we have this amazing system of wiring our entire home with multiple rooms, and every room has a light switch. That's great. They didn't have that. So they would always walk around from room to room with holding a little ner. And he says, you want a raya? Go back to earlier Masechah Shabbos, where it discusses the few sugyas in Shabbos that have nothing to do with Shabbos, the Chanukah sugyas. The sugyas that have beis and beis, where you light the ner Chanukah b'fnim, v'otzio dolek achutza, Gazru daro omer l'tzarcho adlakei. So they made a gzera that you're not yotzei ner Chanukah if you light it inside and then you bring it outside. Because someone's going to see you bring it outside, they're going to think you just took the candle you lit for yourself in your house and you just brought it outside. But if it's hadlako, it's a mitzvah. So the hadlaka has to be l'shem mitzvah. You have to do a hadlaka for the purpose of the mitzvah. But what's going on? Why are we discussing such a case? Who moves candles? So it must be that it's a fairly common occurrence that they move candles. Is that the greatest raya in the world? Not far from the greatest raya in the world, because not everything the Gemara discusses is the most common occurrence that are things that happen frequently. The Gemara discusses, the Gemara discusses this Abra Bambatia, a case of a woman going into a bathtub that was used by a man previously, and she becomes pregnant from being in that bathtub. Not the most common occurrence in the world. I mean, it's become much more common once in the 1960s or so, when they started figuring out artificial insemination. But they didn't have that in the times of Chazal. They had this theoretical construct that doesn't really physically happen. So it's, the Gemara very often discusses things on a theoretical level that aren't the most common things to happen. And part of the beauty of Shas is that no matter what comes up with all the advances that we have, there's always a Gemara we can apply one way or another. That's because they were free thinkers. They allowed cases that had no relevance to halacha. So this is no relevance to reality. So this is far from the most far-fetched case that the Gemara ever came up with, that the guy's actually moving an air. So it's not a raya necessarily that someone's moving in there. Okay. Vayin lekamon mem zayin amalav, demetaltun kuna agav kitme, upirish rashi, shu klina choshesh shemevin bo aor, lefnei asorim lishchamin. That there was a klina choshesh that they would use to daf. Rashi's explaining a case in the Gemara, and he says, yeah, this is the kli that they would always use to bring the fire to government officials or to officers, so that they could use it to warm up from. This is a much stronger raya, because we're talking about something, the Gemara is clearly talking about something that was a common kli, and Rashi's defining this kli. So this was something that they made, and he's saying, yeah, this was the kli that they would use to schlep from place to place with fire in it. So that's a much stronger raya. Hareisha betaltel and eish betoch kli b'shabbos l'tzorachimum. Va'afsha bevadai ein mikol ze hechrich. So granted, none of these proofs are home runs, against the Chazon Ish. But mikol makom mistaver l'chara dein makom ener kavua mamish. But it's just not mistaver like the Chazon Ish, that every time they lit a candle, it had to stay there always. Va'afim kovim lo makom mistaver l'chara dein kviu so gemura yoser mi menora v'kilos chasanim do'avei muksa. And even if they were kaveh makom, the level of kviyus makom you need in order to make something muktza would have to be a very serious level of kviyus makom. It wouldn't just be something that you generally leave there. It would have to be something that you always leave there. And that's unlikely that's what happens. So that's his first quibble with the Chazon Ish on a metzius level. That metzius wise, it just doesn't seem to really conform to what we know as the reality. It doesn't seem that they would really leave things in one place. So he says, second kash on the Chazon Ish. Vot sarachin l'fi divrei Chazon Ish. Dimken yeh ner muktzah gam b'yom tov. If that were the case, you shouldn't be allowed to move the ner in Yom Tov either. Why? Because what was the concern? What was the reason that it was muktzah? That you never ever move a candle. Why do you never move a candle? Okay, we had two possible reasons why you never move a candle. Either you never move it because you're afraid it's going to be extinguished and you have no way of relighting it. Or you never move it just because you never ever move it. That's the metzius. People don't move these things. If you say like the second way, that people just don't move it, so then on Yantav it should also be mutzah, because people just don't move candles. If you say like the first way, it's not really a problem. I mean, if you say that the reason people don't move it, according to the Chazon Ish, is mi-chashash kibui, is because of a concern that it'll be extinguished, and like Dr. Brown said before, the whole concern that it'll get extinguished is, then you're going to be stuck without light for the rest of Shabbos, so on Yantav you don't really have that problem. Because in Yantif, as long as you have some other flame somewhere, you can light from an existing flame and you could relight it. So it wouldn't be a problem. But if you assume, like the Chazon Ish says, that it just wasn't the derech to ever move candles, well then on Yantif, you would have the same issue. And we know that that's not the halacha. A ner is not muktzah on Yantif. It's only muktzah on Shabbos. So that's kasha number two on the Chazon Ish. Kasha number three on the Chazon Ish, and I'm not going to read it inside, just because if I read everything inside, we're not going to get too far. Kasha number three on the Chazon Ish is he quotes from Tosfos Masechta Shabbos a little bit earlier on. I have the Tosfos and the Maror Mekomos here, but again, not going to source number six if you want to see it. But the kasha, the third kasha is that Tosfos holds that there is a concept of muksa machma shekoveil o makom, and that's shitas Tosfos, that being koveil makom itself does create muksa, but many other Rishonim disagree with that entire concept. So it's good. The Chazon Ish has a vart of what makes the flame muktza l'shitas HaTosfos. But what's Chazon Ish going to say according to all the other Rishonim who reject that entire concept of kviyas makom, that when you kaveya makom for something, that automatically makes it muktza? Chazon Ish only has a good explanation according to shitas HaTosfos. So that's the rejection of the first shita of what makes the flame muktza. So again, first shita, what makes flame muktza, says Chazon Ish, the fact that nobody ever moves flames, and therefore you kaveya makom, that makes it muktza. Three kashas. Number one, people do move flames. Number two, if nobody ever moved flames, it would be muktza on Yantif as well. And number three, the very notion that there's such a thing as kviyas makom, making something muktza, is a machlokas rishonim, and this is only shitas HaTosfos. What are you going to do with all the other rishonim? So he moves on to the second approach of the Chazon Ish. Second approach of the Chazon Ish is that maybe the shalhevet, the flame, is muktza mishum nolad. And he bases it on the Gemara in Maseches Brachos Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. Did Nachri shehidluk miYisrael b'Motzei Shabbos mevorchen alav mishum da esh harishona azala ve'esh hamischadesh lo nase ba'avera. Right, the halacha is that you're not supposed to use for Havdalah, for the ner of Havdalah, a ner sheshavas, a ner that was there throughout the entire Shabbos. You're supposed to use a new ner, something that's brand new. Right, that's the halacha on Motzoi Shabbos Havdalah, not like Motzoi Yom Kippur. Motzoi Shabbos Havdalah, you don't use a ner sheshavas. So what if you had a ner that was lit the entire Shabbos? You had a yahrzeit candle lit the entire Shabbos, and then you lit a Havdalah candle from that yahrzeit candle. Would that be permissible to use that for Havdalah? Or, more common example, you have a blech, and the stovetop is lit the entire Shabbos, and you can't find any matches, so you take your Havdalah candle, and you light straight from the stovetop. Is that a viable flame to use for Havdalah? So the halacha is, yes it is, because the Eish HaRishona, Azalah, this is a brand new Eish, this is something brand new. So apparently the assumption is that when you light a flame, there's a certain sense of newness, a constant sense of newness to the flame. Things that are new, things that just come into being, are considered to be nolad, are considered that is the classic example of muktza. The very first sugya of muktza in Maseches Beitza, which is pretty much the Masechta about muktza, is a Beitza shenolda biyomtov, is something that's nolad that comes into existence. So the Chazon Ish says maybe the flame has a din of nolad, but the Gemara Brachos doesn't just say where you light one candle from another. The Gemara Brachos seems to assume that a flame itself, as it continues to burn, each moment it's something new. That each moment it's a new fire that wasn't there before. So Chazon Ish himself rejects this because he says if that were the case, the ner, the shem of psila, would not only be basis l'davar aser, it would be basis l'davar aser ule davar muter. Because yes, the flame itself has newness to it every moment, but it also has oldness to it. And the ner, the shem of psila, supported both the part of the flame that was old, that was there from before Shabbos, and the part of the flame, or whatever element of the flame, whatever koach in the flame, that's there now on Shabbos. So it would be both the basis l'davar aser, as well as the basis l'davar muter. And the halacha is, we learned whenever it was last week, basis l'davar aser l'davar muter is muter, that it does not become muktzah. And yet the Gemara is explicit that the ner, the shemen, and the psila are aser because they are a basis l'davar aser. So Rav Asher, ironically, as much as he doesn't like the approaches of the Chazon Ish, doesn't think that this is a good reason to reject the approach of the Chazon Ish, the fact that it's a basis l'davar aser l'davar muter. Because he points out pretty cogently, I think, that normally when you have a basis l'davar aser l'davar muter, you deal with two distinct entities, a davar ha'aser and a davar ha'muter, and they are clearly discernible from each other, right? And meaning, what's the classic example? Basal davar, asal davar, mutar. You have your candles on the table, and you have whatever the challah is on the table, right? So the challah is of the davar mutar, the candles of the davar asr. You can clearly distinguish and know what is the davar asr and what is the davar mutar. But if you have a flame that consists of energy that's both asr and mutar, so maybe that doesn't count as the basal davar, asal davar, mutar. Maybe it becomes like a single entity of Isser, because it's completely Mu'urav, it's completely mixed together. So he says he thinks that that's why it's not a viable rejection of this Shita. He says, but I do have a viable rejection of the Shita, I just don't think the Chazanish's rejection of this Shita is a viable rejection of the Shita. What did we say? What was the Svara? Why is Basal Sudavra Asu Davra Mutar Mutar? Right, so we said because I think we had a couple of svaras, but one of the svaras was that that primarily we assume that what's the whole svara for basis of rasa being a problem is that the basis is tafel to the iser, that it's almost it almost becomes part of the iser. It's a secondary to the iser. Whereas when you have a davar mutar as well, as long as the davar mutar is at least as chashav as the davar asr, the basis is tafel to the mutar, every bit as much as it's tafel to the isr, which may mean it's not tafel at all. It's not secondary to anything. Yeah, that's great when you have a davar mutar and davar asr, but if you have no discernible davar mutar, then you can't say that it becomes tafel to the davar mutar. No, it's tafel to this entity which has isr in it. There's no way of separating the mutter. Meaning, the basal davar asal davar mutter assumes that the davar mutter could be moved. That the davar mutter could be moved. The chalas can be moved. But when you have the davar asal davar mutter mu'urav together, well then the davar mutter itself can't be moved because there's always davar asr on the davar, together with the davar mutter. So that's why he doesn't think that that's a fair rejection of the shita of the Chazon Ish. What he thinks is a fair rejection is that he doesn't think the halachos of what determines something as nolad in regards to muktzah has anything to do with what determines what's called a new flame on Motzai Shabbos. Meaning the newness of the flame on Motzai Shabbos depends on the mitzius of new energy being supplied to the flame. When we talk about nolad in regards to muktzah, we're dealing with something that by human perception, it wasn't there before. Because that's what muktzah is. It's human perception. Muktzah is what I think is part of my Shabbos experience or what I put out of my mind for my Shabbos experience. So when I see a flame, let's say I see the Yahrzeit candle lit all Shabbos long. So I look at that flame and it's the same Yahrzeit candle. I don't view it as a different Yahrzeit candle than it was an hour ago. I view it as the same thing. When it comes to the halachos of muktzah, it's completely dependent on human perception. It's not dependent on whatever the mitzius of the science of the energy in the flame really, really actually is. When it comes to a ner on Motzei Shabbos, where we're discussing the creation of our, and it's all about bria, yeah, good. So then physics plays a role. But when we're talking about the ner of nolad and halachos of muktzah, doesn't seem to be a proper tzushtal, as they say. It doesn't seem to be a proper comparison between the two cases. The other problem is, the same problem we had with the first sheet of the Chazon Ish, is that Nolad is a problem on Yantif as much as it's a problem on Shabbos. In fact, it's a bigger problem on Yantif than it is on Shabbos. This is one of the areas of Muktzah where we're more Machmir on Yantif than we are on Shabbos. So if the flame is a problem of Nolad, well then we got Yantif problems. And the halacha is that it's not so, that a flame can be moved on Yantif. So for these reasons, Rav Asher says he doesn't like either of the approaches of the Chazon Ish. So he says, I had a thought, and this is the one he just flippantly says for a moment before he immediately backs out on it, that maybe there's a third approach he could take, that the reason that the flame is muktzah, he says, shekol toldaso umeshech havayaso al yidei havara shehi malacha. The very existence of this flame, and the continual existence of this flame, is based on havara, on kindling. And kindling is an av malacha. So anything whose very existence is by an act of kindling comes through an act of an av malacha, it's kiyum zal yidei malacha, maybe that has to be muktzah. Meaning maybe that you can't take something whose very existence and continued support in nature is all dependent on an av malacha and say that it's completely mutter. Maybe that has to be muktzah. That has to be the chazal rogozer muktzah. But Rav Asher points out, I mean, he says, it's like, It's a kal v'chomer from a klisha melachta le'iser. Klisha melachta le'iser is just something that you happen to use for iser. This, the whole mahus of it is iser. The whole mahus of a flame is iser. It's like a super klisha melachta le'iser. So it's got to be muktza. But he says, you know, it doesn't say that anywhere. So it's, you know, it's a nice creative idea to suggest, but it doesn't really say that anywhere. I was thinking, I wasn't even sure what this meant. Like, cooked food, isn't that also something that its whole kiyum, its whole existence comes about through a malacha? But I think what he means, once the food is cooked, it's dormant. Nothing is going on with it anymore. Nothing's changing, nothing's moving, nothing's happening. Whereas the flame, it's alive. So it's more of a continuous process. But anyway, he rejects it because he says, you know, I like to be creative, but you got to be somewhat traditional and stick to sources at some point in time. So he says, here's an approach that he thinks we can actually stick with. If you look in the bottom left hand side of page number 9, last two paragraphs, in near bezel lechora de'in toras kli le'inyan tiltol ela bedavar shemishtam shembo. So this is a concept called kli in Hilchos Muktza, that in order for something to be a kli, it has to be something that you use. It can't be something, meaning that you physically use. It can't just be something that you admire from afar, or that you see, or that you notice. The Poskim never really discuss what's called a kli, what's not called a kli, in regards to Shabbos. In regards to Taros, we have a whole Masechta about it. Masechas Kelim, the Masechta that everyone loves to learn for Shloshims and stuff. So, L'chara Tali Adavur, Hadavar, B'mashem Yuchar Adavar L'Adam L'Shimush Ovana Aso. Achazinan Diyesh Dvarim Sha'adam Nanameyam B'Shabbos, Vafal Pikeim Danubem Din Muktza, Kitmunos kir v'shaone kir v'atzitei prachim, that there are things that people just get hana'a from, and yet people do consider them to be muktzah. Something that's a picture on the wall, that's not just on the wall for convenience sake, because it's easier to look at it that way, but it's on the wall because that's where it belongs, that it's a very chash of a picture, and therefore it belongs specially on the wall. So you don't use it, you look at it. But he says it could be that geder kli ikaro dover shemishtam shembo, that generally speaking, in order for something to be a kli, it has to be something that's used, and it fills some sort of human need, some sort of human purpose that a person does with it. So he says that would explain the following. On yantif, the flame is something you use because you're allowed to cook on yantif. You're allowed to use the flame on yantif for something other than just seeing it, just looking at the or, and therefore maybe the flame on Yantif would not be Muktza. Whereas on Shabbos, since it's not something that you use at all, it's just something that you see, so maybe it doesn't even get off the ground to be defined as a kli to begin with, to even think about it being called like something like a kli shemalach le'iser. It says on the top of page 10, V'zei yisod muktza d'shal heves, d'kivan she'ein ha'adam ishtamish begufo, elenena me'oro mechomo, ein bo toras kli, machmas gufa. I'm sorry, I said it the other way. Since it's not a kli, it's something that you use, and therefore is not muktza. Something except for a kli, shamalach l'iser, right? But a kli is something that typically would not be muktza. Something that's not a kli, a rock, a splinter of wood. Those are all muktza items. Those are muktza machmas gufa. Those are muktza because they aren't a kli. They're not something that you use on Shabbos. So he says, when it comes to yantif, the flame is like a kli, because the flame is something that you use. And since it's usable and it's like a kli, that's why it's not going to be muktza. But when it comes to Shabbos, you know what kind of muktza the flame is? It's muktza machmas gufo. It's muktza machmas gufo because there's no use for it. You'll say, but I enjoy the light of it. Yeah, but that's not using. There's a difference between using something and enjoying the light from it.
What about the whole reason for light, for candlelighting to begin with, shalom bayis?
Yeah, that's enjoyment from it, but when it comes to defining something as a kli, he seems to assume that there needs to be some sort of mamashus in the way that you use it. There needs to be a more substantive type of use, as opposed to, you know, like the way you would look at a picture where you're just seeing it. Right? It would need to be a more substantive type of use. Something that you touch, you feel, you move, whereas this is just something that you see. He points out that even if something is not a kli, but if it's designated for a particular usage, then you can move it for that usage, even though it remains muktza for every other purpose. even to move a tzorach gufo makomo mechama l'tzel. But when something has a particular usage, so typically you're allowed to move it for that usage. And he has five rayas to this idea. All right, we've got 3 minutes. Maybe we'll do one or two of the rayas. Let's try to pick one of the easier rayas. Yeah, let's take the last of the five rayas. If you look on page 10, in the left-hand column, where I have the hay circled, he says, V'nira b'derach zeh b'bir shitas hatosas b'reish lulavah rava. Da'arava avi mukta, kivin she'eno asui kli. That an arava is mukta, because it's not a kli. Afsha omid the mitzvah, even though the arava is supposed to be used for a mitzvah. V'chein kanim shel lechem apanim, the lulav, and the boards that they would use for the lechem apanim and the lulav, the kivin de'enim kli gamor ve'enim tovar kli mesuyam, ein heim muchanim elu leikar hachanasan dahinu l'tzorach kiyum mitzvasan avol muktzin heim l'tzorach b'yamli. Here you have something that's designated for some sort of use. You're supposed to use the arava for the mitzvah. You're supposed to use the lulav for the mitzvah. You're supposed to use the boards by the lechem apanim to support the lechem apanim. So for that use, it's not mukta. But for everything else, it is muktzah. So says Rav Asher, you're allowed to use the flame for light because for that use, it's not muktzah. That's its designated use. But for every other use, it's not just muktzah, but the worst kind of muktzah. It's not even mutter to move, l'tzarech gufa, l'tzarech mukamo. And he has four other examples, mostly from Masechet Beitzah, but from throughout Shas, to highlight this idea that sometimes you have something that's mukhan for a specific use, and for that use alone, it will not be muksa. But the gabi everything else, it will be muksa. So it's an offshoot of muksa machmas gufo. And he says, ultimately, at the end of the day, that is the muksa of the flame. Okay.